Welcome to the Outsource Accelerator podcast. This is a short format podcast where we explore business and outsourcing mastery. My name is Derek Gallimore, and I am really excited to bring you the leading podcast in outsourcing. Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Outsource Accelerator podcast. My name is Derek Gallimore, and this is episode number 195. So today I am talking to Butch Valenzuela of Visaya KPO. So Visaya is a BPO in the bigger end of town. We dive deeper into what they offer and the processes, and it gives you some insight into how BPO and outsourcing changes in the bigger end of town with the bigger clients and the bigger contracts. So it's a really interesting conversation. I previously interviewed Butch in episode 190. If you want to go back and listen to his backstory and his journey through his own corporate experience in America, it's an interesting one. So Visaya KPO is a really interesting BPO, in not only because it actually has a 350-seat facility right out in the provinces, and this really made headlines worldwide. So Butch shares his experience and insights on that facility. A really interesting conversation. So I enjoyed it. This episode is slightly longer, but stick with it because it's an interesting one. So if you want any of the show notes, and if you want to get in touch with Butch, then go to outsourceaccelerator.com/1. Hi, and welcome back, everybody. Today I'm joined again by Butch Valenzuela, and Butch is the founder and president of Visaya KPO. Hi, Butch, how are you?
Good afternoon. How are you, Derek?
Fantastic, fantastic, and thank you for your time. So you, just to really briefly recap, you are a proud Filipino, but went to the US for 30 years to a lot of the for a lot of the formative part of your career, worked in a Fortune 200 company, and returned to the Philippines, seeing the opportunity in outsourcing back in 2006, 2007, and now you have a leading KPO in the call center and medical transcription sector. So thank you so much for joining us. And today, we have had you previously, but today I just want to really deep dive into your services as a KPO, exactly what a KPO is even, and the difference maybe between BPOs that are now maybe more focusing on SMEs compared to a BPO such as yours, which is into more the bigger corporate clients. So thanks so much for joining us. I suppose initially, do you want to just give us a brief overview of your background?
Sure. Let me correct you in two things there.
Please do.
One is, I was the founder, but my son will actually not be happy unless I actually call him as a co-founder of the corporation. So both of us, actually, we are a father and son tandem that has actually started this this business.
Nice.
He actually runs the operational side of the house. So I'm pretty proud of him as well. The other part is we do not do transcription. We are more in the medical billing and coding space,
right,
for the healthcare. But Visaya basically is really into four industry segments. We have the contact center service delivery. We have healthcare information management, finance and accounting outsourcing, and as well as we do IT consulting work. And those four segments, we do believe, are, you know, the industries that would help catapult us to the next level. We are an 11-year-old company. We started out with about 14 people, and today have grown to about 850 people, but still growing. Hopefully, we will be breaching the 1,000 FTE level in about a month, as well as we have three geographic locations. We are in Makati. This is where we really started. But we have a Dumaguete office today. And we also have we will be having a Bacolod office that will be opening up first quarter of the year, and we're building about 1,000, about 1,200 seats over there.
Wow, that's a huge facility. And well done, well done. So I suppose initially you have taken the position to have a Makati. Manila is obviously the central position for most BPOs, but you've gone to Visaya, and you're building another facility in the provinces with 1,200 staff. How do you weigh up the differences, the pros and cons of a metro-based BPO versus a provincial-based BPO?
I guess there are a few things that actually occur in the provinces that don't normally, that is not as predominant, I guess. I don't know whether predominant is the right word for it, but in the provinces rather than in the metro. And one of that, one of those things would be attrition rates. We also have a facility in the town of Tanhai, which is, we are an accredited partner of Accenture. So we have a project called Rural BPO that we started about 5 years ago in the town of Tanhai. It's in the middle of nowhere. And it's been written up in many different international media. Magazines and newspapers, as well as TV. I guess
because it's a huge initiative to get jobs out there, isn't it, into the provinces, and I suppose as well, there's as you've seen a lot of public support, a lot of government support, maybe from doing that.
Certainly, going into the outlying, there was a move to go into the next wave cities. We've taken it two steps farther, wherein we've put it into a town that really is primarily only agricultural.
Wow.
And fishing.
Wow. And how big is that facility? What sort of numbers are you needing to find and groom and manage?
We have about 350 seats there. At any given time, we have about 400 FTEs that was working there.
Right. And what sort of roles are they typically doing? Is it sort of voice-based customer service, or what are they doing? What do you find is
it's
best?
It's primarily voice-based,
right,
for the U.S. or for the U.S. healthcare industry.
So again, that's pretty incredible. You're finding quality language out there in the province, which again I'm aware of as happening. But people should realize that is a pretty significant, an incredible quality of a developing nation right out there in the provinces to have sort of high English sufficiency right out there in the provinces. Yeah.
And that would be true here. I mean, we have been very happy with the quality of the people that we have there. When you think about it, when you talk about Visayans, Cebuanos, Ilonggos, or, people from those provinces, it's very interesting because when I talk to my people, to people here in Manila, not in the office, but outside of the office, when you're just strolling along, or perhaps wanting to, just talk to the agents outside of the office. You could be asking a question in English, and chances are you because they do know that I can speak Tagalog, the response would be in Tagalog. In the provinces, you might talk to them in Tagalog, but the response actually comes back in English.
Mm. Yeah.
Simply because Tagalog is not something that they would be comfortable with.
And I think in some of the provinces, and I you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but some of the other provinces, there's so many dialects that actually English is really the only kind of standardized means of communicating. Is that right? And as a result, like English is pretty strong in some of the more provincial locations because of that reason.
That would be true. I mean, that's not a generalization by any means, but, you know, if people actually go through and either finish college, either finish high school, as a matter of fact, or college, chances are that, you know, the proficiency of English is that much better, in my opinion.
And so in that regional town, you would you be one of the primary employers there then?
We are actually the largest employer in the town, outside of the local government.
Incredible, huh? And then obviously, you know, without sort of digging too deep or looking at this too commercially, but so there's significant cost advantage there, is there, for clients, for yourself, for clients, but also it's a win-win for everyone involved?
You could certainly say that it is, you know, a little cheaper in the provinces, but we don't provide basically advantages from a price-wise, because the feeling is that the level of service that we can provide is what you are paying for.
Right, so you're pricing based on deliverables as opposed to a bum on a seat, basically, yeah.
Yeah, and I guess here's the other component of it, or the other way of looking at it as well. You know, when you talk about the larger players, you know, they have certainly a large overhead structure that they'd have to, you know, contend with. We price ourselves way below, you know, what a typical, and we're trying to make that change as well. But in the beginning, to be a player that is very attractive to SMEs in the United States, you'd have to actually price yourself lower than what the big boys would.
Right.
But then, you know, provide the same or better service than what a big boy could provide.
Right.
And that's our motto. And, you know, but because of that, you know, there are, you know, the margin differences.
Are maintained, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. And it's, you know, if we price ourselves a lot lower in the provinces, there would be, I'll be honest with you, you know, it wouldn't be very fruitful any longer.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, it's you know, and this is what people don't realize, this is an incredible opportunity for those people in the provinces, isn't it? And to get good jobs out there in a good facility with good environment and a career ladder, it's really an incredible opportunity for the provinces and the people out there to be involved, isn't it?
It has been. And, you know, 54% of the people that we employ, based upon, because we do track, you know, by virtue of, you know, because this is, from an Accenture perspective, part of their corporate social responsibility. Obviously, Accenture could not locate themselves in a rural town for various reasons. So they'd have to actually subcontract that work to a, you know, to a player like us.
Right.
But the whole intent is to uplift the rural community. And, you know, it has been a very successful program for us, you know, both Accenture and ourselves, in the sense that, We've helped a lot of people. And about 54% of the people that we have there are now the breadwinner of the family.
How long has that facility been there, Butch?
It's been there for 5 years.
Right. And did you get a lot of, because you can come up against a lot of red tape, or things can be made particularly easy. Did you get a lot of support and buy-in from the town hall and the community to sort of help this along?
Absolutely. And we've, also on the other, the other side of the house, we've contributed to not only the growth of that community, but also have helped them out in, various programs that they might have. For example, and what's really big in the provinces would be the fiesta. And they typically have a, a parade, as well as they have a Mist and High program that they, every year. And we are a big part of that.
Right. So it's really it's a kind of two-way community vibe, isn't it? It's a true partnership, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it's I've also been asked by the before by the DOST and today by the DICT, which is the Department of Information, Communication and Technology of the Philippine government, to go around the country and talk about it. And people are, the local LGUs have been very interested in getting a program going like this. The, I guess the other part of that though is really it's setting up something like this isn't a cheap proposition. So,
Right.
to set up 300 seats, for example, is not cheap. So it's,
And
it's.
proportionally even more because maybe you know it's harder to get A grade facilities built out in the province, is that right? Is it almost more logistically complex?
That would be correct. The I guess the advantage or the we were lucky, let's put it that way. We were lucky when we first started this that there was a an existing it was built from a an old school, an old college closed down, and the landlord had actually converted it to become a call center, but could not get it going.
Right.
And so we decided, at first we looked at it, and I'll be honest with you, my first thought was, there is no way I'm going to locate myself out here.
Right.
But and then the Accenture opportunity came along, and I said, this is, guys, I might have a perfect facility for you. So they went, looked at it, and the rest is history.
Wow, well done, man. It's a success story, isn't it, for everyone? So I want to now sort of pull back from that office and more generally about the services that you offer. You offer four core services, or I suppose kind of catering to four operational needs. What do you see as your typical client profile, and if people approach you kind of fitting that profile, how do you take them through the sales process, the integration process? How do people get started with you? Can you kind of paint a picture in that regard?
Sure. Well, the first question is, we typically on the contact center service delivery, we look at various industries that are, we try to stay away from the typical banking, financial institution type work, because, a lot of that, a lot of the larger players would actually take on that role. We also stay away from the larger telco companies for the same reason. So we try to locate a specific niche For example, I can't divulge names, but we handle the technical support work for and customer service work for one of the largest drone companies in the world.
Right.
We have handled many clients that continue either, continue on today or have, we actually look at, different processes that are quite honestly true to what we feel should be our core competence would be. We also are very, we haven't really grown that quickly over the last 10 years to be at the 850 mark. That's in this industry that seems to be a fairly slow growth, but we are, we don't have, outside investors, so we've pretty much self-funded the company over the last 11 years. So when you talk about clients in the contact center space, we have to be very prudent and really look at those clients, look at their, do a lot of due diligence on them, perhaps looking at their Dun & Bradstreet scores, looking at really the type of industry that they're in, so on and so forth. So, and it's a lengthy process from that perspective. Some clients really just say, you know what, I would want to get your services, but you have 2 weeks to actually get operational. We typically would say, you know what, if that's the way that you'd like to handle it, then I think we will pass. Simply because, for in this industry, we've in the last 11 years, we have gained enough experience that typically that does not really work very well. Stay away from, the telemarketing, telesales type work because of, they typically have very short shelf life. And that's the unfortunate part about the smaller players in the Philippines today is, they start a company without really looking at, first of all, not really having true market reach, and really not understanding completely what the, what the industry actually can, the type of accounts that would make them successful. But I guess my experience in this, in this field, I mean, my experience working in the United States has given me a little bit better insight in working this field. On the healthcare side, we do deal both on the provider as well as on the payer side. So we target hospitals and IPAs, which are independent physician associations, for example. And do a lot of their medical billing and coding work. They're really nothing but managed services organizations.
And these are pretty specialized niches, aren't they? They kind of follow a process and have a lot of regulation and security around them, and it's just really matching up the buyer and seller, yeah.
Absolutely. And the other part that I guess to be to say that you are a complete HIPAA compliant organization and have yourself audited by a US firm is not cheap. It costs us an arm and a leg every year for a US company to come here and do a complete audit of our processes and our systems and our the technology that we deploy and so on and so forth. So that's something that we are really very proud of as well.
No, incredible. And can you, what are examples of security requirements? Because again, I think people listening out there, they might not really appreciate the sophistication of these facilities over here in the Philippines. What are some of the examples of security arrangements you have in your facilities to be compliant?
There are physical security measures. For example, our facilities have 24-hour security guards that are deployed. We have CCTV cameras all over the place so that you can monitor. We have a monitoring room for all our sites so that in this one room we could look at all the sites that we have and monitor how people work. Obviously, from another physical security would be we don't allow any type of recording devices into the PWA or what you call the operations floor. So you can't bring cell phones, cameras, whatever type of recording devices. You can't bring paper and pens into our healthcare operations floor. There's just so many different things that are done by and I guess the other part is that we take compliance very seriously. So we have about 10 people today in our compliance department to ensure that we abide by any type of compliance requirements.
Yeah, there's
The
a
other
significant sort of daily operational cost to that, isn't it? Just to make sure everyone's toeing the line and everything's in place, and yeah, it's incredible, isn't it?
Yes, and when we open up Bacolod, I'd probably we probably are looking at doubling the size of that department as well, in order for us to have enough coverage. The other part is, there is when they come in to audit, they not only look at our processes in-house, all the documentation that are required on our end. But they also do a where they come into our systems and try to actually
Ah, they hacked them, yeah.
hack through it.
Right.
So
It's very smooth, isn't it? Yeah, you've passed with flying colors every time.
so far we've been doing okay. We get a passing grade. And we've improved year over year. So this year we will be having our next audit sometime in the month of September again.
Wow, well, good luck for that. So, again, I like to stress to people that the sophistication, levels of sophistication, because a lot of people in the West might think of the Philippines and outsourcing service providers as a bit of a sweatshop, but often, it's the other way, and the incredible levels of sophistication that you see in these facilities, the incredibly kind of expertise and optimized processes that goes on really does blow people away when they see it firsthand. And I've seen some of these secure facilities, and they really are, quite something else.
The other thing of note that we always insist on with our clients is that we do not bring the data to the Philippines. When we do work, we work with their systems either through a VPN connection into their systems,
Right.
or it would be a cloud-based environment. But basically, the data would we do not actually we would not work with clients, especially in the healthcare space, where the client would require us to actually have a copy of that data in the Philippines.
Wow. So you're just kind of screen grabbing. It's incredible, isn't it, in concept that actually. And then because there is this controversy over outsourcing, and it really brings into question exactly how do you define outsourcing, how do you define offshoring, remote staffing, because you're not actually pulling any data out, are you? You're just kind of working on their servers, yeah.
That would be correct. And actually, screen grabbing is not the right technical term for it. That
I
would
imagine
really be
not.
out of compliance.
I really.
So we connect to their systems and actually work with their systems online. It just so happens that the data is not brought into the
Sure.
Philippine territory. It would still be based in the US.
And I imagine there's fairly standardized protocols for that now, yeah, in terms of how that happens and how that's engineered, yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Fantastic. Incredible. Thank you so much, Butch. It's been really, fantastic insight into one of these bigger, more secure operations. And again, your, CSR operation is just incredible. So we will put more information about that in the show notes, link to the article. And if anyone wants to get in touch with you, Butch, or know more about Visaya KPO, how can they do that?
They can either reach me through our website. We have a fairly robust methodology of being able to leave information, and then I could respond to it fairly quickly. The other thing is they could either reach out to me on LinkedIn, under Butch Valenzuela, and my email address is actually listed there as well.
Fantastic. And we'll put all of that in the show notes. Thank you so much, Butch.
Thank you very much.
Was Butch Valenzuela of Visaya KPO. If you want to get in touch with Butch, if you want to know any of his contact details, if you want to read any of those items that we mentioned, I'll also put a couple of articles into the show notes about his provincial BPO facility, then just go to our show notes. You can find all of that at outsourceaccelerator.com/195. And of course, if you want to ask us anything, then just drop us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.